This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The impeachment hearings at the U.S. Capitol took another dramatic turn on Wednesday when House Republicans stormed a closed-door session where new testimony was being delivered. We spend the next hour talking about that and other national political stories. We're joined by the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Ken, how are you?
I'm fine, Michael. What a day yesterday at the Capitol, but what a month, what a year, right?
We have so much to talk about. So to help us out with it, Ken and I are also joined in the studio today by WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson. Howard, thanks for coming in.
Certainly. Absolutely.
Okay. We always start with a trivia question. Ken, tell us what it is.
Well, it is baseball time in the country. Not every team made it. Howard, I'm sorry for your team.
Yeah, I'm sorry for yours, too.
I'm sorry for my team, too, exactly. But, so the question is, who was the first sitting president to throw out a ceremonial first pitch at the World Series who was defeated for re-election?
Ooh. Okay, so there's a lot going on there. So we have a president who's throwing a first pitch, but it has to be at a World Series game.
Correct.
And then they have to have had lost re-election after that event. Oh, wow. Okay. That's a good one. Do you know the answer?
That's it's
513-419-7100. You can call us at 513-419-7100 with your guesses. Ken, tell them what they'll win.
They will win two tickets to the world. They will win a political junkie button going gangbusters on eBay.
Yeah, they love these buttons. Also, 513-419-710 is the number to join the trivia question or to weigh in with your opinions, your comments, your questions about the national political scene and all the issues going on right now. If you've got something to say to us or something about what we're talking about, give us a call. You can email talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter as well. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and get some of those into the show as well. We've got to start with what happened in the Capitol on Wednesday. Laura Cooper, this Pentagon official overseeing Ukraine policy, was set to testify at an impeachment hearing, and House Republicans entered this secure facility and refused to leave until the closed-door hearing was made public. Ken, we start with you. What do we make of what we saw coming out of the Capitol yesterday?
Well, here's the thing. The big news of the week, by far, was the testimony by William Taylor, the top U.S. diplomat in Ukraine, who basically said, yes, there was a quid pro quo between the president offering or withholding aid to Ukraine, unless the Kiev government did an investigation on Joe Biden and his son on some trumped up, whoops, no pun intended, charges that they probably doesn't exist, but Trump wanted to use the Ukrainian government to further his political will. And William Taylor testified about that, which was a bombshell because it wasn't secondhand testimony. It really happened. So the president was outraged. The Republicans were outraged. And the president has been complaining for a long time that Republicans are not defending him vocally enough. You know, they're not really going all out to defend him. So with the brains of some of the about maybe two dozen Republicans, they stormed this room where secret testimony or no, not secret testimony, but behind closed doors testimony was being held. And this is a place where both parties during the Benghazi hearings, Republicans held their hearings behind those closed doors. People are not allowed to come into that room if you're not a member of the committees. You're not allowed to bring recording instruments or telephones. Well, about two dozen House Republicans stormed it. They pushed away Capitol Hill security guards, and with their cell phones taking pictures of everything, they just wanted to make sure they wanted to open up the process because what the Democrats were doing, in their words, was Stalinistic. That's beyond comprehension.
Howard, you heard Ken say there that Laura Cooper's testimony, which was interrupted yesterday by this House Republican protest, did follow some pretty explosive testimony from William Taylor. He was the acting U.S. ambassador to Ukraine who had told members of Congress that President Trump personally intervened in trying to get Ukraine to investigate Democrats as part of this so-called quid pro quo. I'm nervous about saying that because broadcasters are having a hard time all over the place saying quid pro quo. It's like the local Brent Spence Bridge. It's one of those hard things to say. But that's what the testimony that Taylor gave. Do you think that his testimony provoked these Republicans to do this?
Well, I think it certainly did. I think it was, you know, it was basically a ploy to direct attention away from that testimony. Kennedy's is exactly right. I mean, in investigations in the past, hearings have been held behind closed doors where they talk to these people. They kind of vet them to see what they know. And if it's worthy of having public hearings, they have public hearings. And they will in this case, eventually.
I heard on Fox News this morning, Judge Andrew Napolitano, a frequent commentator on that network, he said on Fox and Friends this morning, quote, "As frustrating as it may be to have these hearings going on behind closed doors, they are consistent with the rules. When were the rules written last? In January of 2015. And who signed them? John Boehner. And who enacted them? A Republican majority," end quote. That was Judge Napolitano on Fox earlier. And I also read that every Benghazi hearing related to the 2011 attack on the U.S. consulate there in Libya, held by Republican members of the House in recent years, was held behind closed doors. So, Ken, do you think this is hypocritical for the position that Republicans are taking now during these impeachment hearings?
Well, I mean, hypocrisy is not even that. I think it's more of a desperation. And Howard is exactly right. It's a distraction from the bombshell of Taylor's testimony on Tuesday. But the fact is, for the Republicans to say, well, you know, we're shut out of this process, that is absolutely not true, because the lawmakers who have been talking to these people behind closed doors are Democrats and Republicans, members of these committees. So to say this is, you know, this is one-sided, it's shifty Adam Schiff pulling a fast one, that's absolute nonsense, because Republicans are there as well, including Jim Jordan, who I would love to raise some money for so he can buy a sports jacket.
he is notorious for going without the jacket, but the shirt and tie look, the sort of high school teacher look, he does rock that. He's been parodied a couple of times for that, but that's a personal choice. We haven't seen all of William Taylor's testimony. We've just seen that opening statement. That's what's been released, and we have seen some information come out from people who heard him speak. And so while some people are concluding that the Republican reaction was provoked by this counter message from the president's narrative, I wonder what it tells us about the future of any evidence that comes forward, Howard, because this is a process that could be a long one, and we could be presented with a lot of new information. Are we seeing a block of people with votes on this process basically saying nothing is going to matter?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's possible, but I think they are trying to make a determination if they should hold public hearings. And as you say, Democrats and Republicans are both in the room behind those closed doors. And the answer to that, just based on what we know so far, is probably yes. Taylor and others will be brought to these committees and testify in public. And you know that they'll be carried by all the networks and all the media. And we'll know a whole lot more at that point.
We want to hear from you as well. What do you think about the impeachment hearings as they are proceeding so far? Give us a call at 513-419-7100. We also want to give you a chance to call that number and weigh in on this month's Political Junkie trivia question. Ken, if you don't mind, remind us again what that question is.
We're looking for the first sitting president, or he could have been standing at the time, first sitting president to throw out a ceremonial first pitch at the World Series, the first one of those presidents who was defeated in his bid for re-election.
Okay, so we've got some callers on the line who want to weigh in. Let's go to the phones now. First up to try to guess is Tyler. Hi, Tyler. What's your answer?
I'm thinking it's William Howard Taft.
Ken, is it William Howard Taft?
Well, I knew that was going to be the first guess, because William Howard Taft was the first president to throw out a pitch at a baseball game, but he never threw one out at the World Series.
Ah, see, that's the caveat. Taft did lose, but that was not a World Series throw. Great guess, Tyler. Sorry that it is not correct. We'll continue down the list of callers now. We'll go to Nick. Nick is up. What's your answer, Nick?
Hi, guys.
Hi.
I'm guessing President Jimmy Carter.
Oh, is it Jimmy Carter, Ken?
Jimmy Carter is a great guess, because he did throw out the first pitch at the World Series in 1979, which I think was Pittsburgh and the Orioles, if memory serves. But he was not the first president to be defeated who threw out a first pitch ceremony at the World Series.
We are narrowing it down, it looks like, then. So, Nick, great guess. Sorry that it's the incorrect one. If you think of another one, give us a call back. We might be able to take you again. We'll go down the line. Next, we've got Jason here on the line. Hi, Jason. What's your answer?
Hello, guys. Herbert Walker Bush Sr.
Okay. Is it Bush Sr.?
Well, he never threw out a pitch at a ceremony first pitch at the World Series.
Okay.
He was defeated for re-election, but no World Series pitch.
All right, Jason, another great guess. I'm sorry that it's not correct. Again, 513-419-7100. Give us a call if you'd like to take a stab at that trivia question or weigh in on some of the issues that we're discussing today. We should also note, as we discuss Bill Taylor's testimony before Congress and Laura Cooper's testimony before Congress, that William Taylor, the acting U.S. ambassador to the Ukraine, who testified behind closed doors during an impeachment hearing, that President Trump personally intervened in trying to get Ukraine to investigate Democrats as part of this so-called quid pro quo for delayed U.S. military aid. Diplomat Gordon Sondland says he doesn't recall or dispute Taylor's key accusations. And Taylor told lawmakers, of course, that he believed Sondland warned an aide to Ukraine President Zelensky that military aid would not arrive without a commitment to investigating former Vice President Joe Biden. Ken, there's a lot of characters involved in this story. And what are we seeing at this point in terms of what the narrative actually is?
Well, that's a good question, because remember, the president and Mike Pompeo and other top officials of the administration have basically directed employees, past and present, not to testify, not to cooperate with this witch hunt of an inquiry. So they've been told not to do it. And when anyone comes forward, the president will call him or her a traitor or human scum or an never Trumper. William Taylor gave 50 years of his life to serving this country in the military, in diplomatic service, in just being a true patriot. So I mean, William Sondland may have a different story, but of course, but Sondland was a multimillionaire donor to Trump's campaign. So he's in a very tough position because he's obviously a political appointee. But when you have people like Cooper or Taylor testifying, these are longtime employees of the government who are not Democrats or Republicans, but people who believe in democracy and the workings of the government. So in answer to your earlier question, Michael, about how long this will go on, the president will definitely lead the argument that these people are traitors or worse. And yet the fact that they are testifying to great risk of their own future says a lot about their loyalty to the country.
And Howard, your thoughts on this in terms of just how people are supposed to digest all of this and all of the different characters and the roles that they're playing in. It's a lot of names, and it seems like some obscure companies are being referenced. Is it just as simple as Trump versus Biden, or is there really something to it? I mean, these are all the questions that people are having to digest while they watch the news every day.
I think the problem that most people are having is trying to sort out who the straight shooters are. And, you know, Ken explained it pretty well, you know, in terms of these people who have never been partisan political types. They've been government servants. They've done, you know, good work. Nobody's ever called them liars. Nobody's ever called them scum or cheats or whatever. They're, until Congress decides that these people that Trump has told not to testify, not to cooperate, until they do something about that, I don't think we're going to be able to sort this out. And they have the power to do that.
Okay. We should note that House Democrats say they are preparing to move the private impeachment inquiry into a more public stage, possibly as soon as next month. Ken, what do these investigative congresspeople have to find in order to be able to convince the American public that a public impeachment and an impeachment vote may be necessary?
Well, I think And I don't, I honestly do not say this as a partisan, but I do believe that there are, even no matter what evidence is presented, I think there's a good percentage of this country who will never see the president as warranting impeachment. I mean, even some Republicans have said he may have done some things that are not especially nice or even legal, but is it impeachable? And that's the question that a lot of people have to ask. You know, right after the October massacre, the Saturday night massacre in October of 1973, when Nixon fired Archibald Cox and Elliot Richardson and William Ruckelshaus in the Watergate investigation, still 53% of the country was opposed to impeachment. It took a long time for the country to come around, and One of the reasons it came around because Republicans had had enough, led by Barry Goldwater, who said to Nixon, look, your situation is untenable. It's time for you to go. Until there are more people like Mitt Romney who stand up and say, our party is getting destroyed in this, and we're backing a president who is, committed many illegal acts, public opinion may not change at all, but that does not mean the Democrats in the House should be deterred. They need to go forward with their investigation, with their inquiry, and then just have a vote. And if you want to absolve the president in the Senate, which is likely, I mean, fine, do it. But the process has to come to a fitting conclusion.
Yeah, and Ken, don't you think that there are, I mean, aside from Mitt Romney, there are more Republicans out there who believe that, but are not yet ready to say it.
That's absolutely true. And you know, Howard, you know, the Republicans who have come forward, Francis Rooney of Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. he said, I think I could be open to impeachment. Well, he announced his retirement this week.
Right.
Will Hurd, the Democrat, the African-American, sorry, Republican from Texas, the only black Republican in the House, he said that, you know, the Trump may be guilty of impeachable offenses. He's retiring too. There is no person in the House, certainly, that I've seen, other than Justin Amash, who is no longer a Republican. He's now an independent. But there's no sitting Republican who says, I am going to vote to impeach the president of the United States. And, of course, the reason they're hesitant is because of what happened to so many other Republicans, like Mark Sanford or Jeff Flake. And the president will get on Twitter and say these guys are traitors and they need to be defeated, and his supporters will defeat them.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. It's our monthly political junkie show with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Ken, we're always glad to have you along. Thanks for being with us. And we also have WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson. Ken, one more time, we're going to go back to the phones and see if anybody can answer that tough trivia question. Give our listeners the question one more time.
First sitting president to throw out a first pitch at the World Series, who was later defeated for re-election.
Okay, and Howard, you've written down your answer, of course, right?
I have.
We always check to see afterwards if you've got it. Let's go back to the lines now. We've got Jason on the line. Jason, what's your answer?
Well, this is a guess, but I know he was a big baseball fan. I'm going to guess Herbert Hoover.
Ken, is it Herbert Hoover?
Herbert Hoover is the correct answer.
Oh!
He threw out the first pitch in 1929 and 1930, and probably for that reason only, he was defeated by Franklin Roosevelt in 1932.
Awesome. Congratulations, Jason. Well,
very good,
done.
Jason.
Very
way to go.
Smart. We always like the little bell, our little bit of commercial morning radio that we throw into the show every week.
And the fake applause.
Absolutely. It's really nice. Jason, our producer, Elise Meckler, is going to take your information so that Ken Rudin can send you one of those beloved political junkie buttons. Congratulations.
It, yes.
Well done. All right. Well, this is the point where we check Howard's work. Howard, what was your guess?
There you go.
He had it right there. Herbert Hoover all along. Awesome. He's good, man. Well done.
I know my baseball, too.
That's it. It's politics and baseball is the show that you should be hosting. 513-419-7100 is also the number to call if you have questions or comments about what we're talking about today or what's going on in the country. And we'll go to the phones now. We have Brad on the line. Hi, Brad. What's your question or comment?
Good afternoon. Yeah, I just think it's a little disingenuous for the guests here that you have on, and I think their political bias is shining through in a very loud way when they bring up and quote Judge Napolitano from Fox News, who, like Mitt Romney, is a never-Trumper, and to think that Judge Napolitano, if he thinks something's is fine, then it must pass muster. But the fact is, John Boehner a Republican who passed these rules for committee investigations, never imagined that they would be using these rules to apply to an impeachment and keep that from the light of day and from the American people and from the Republicans. That should be open to not only the American people, but the other side, the Republicans, and they should be able to call their own witnesses and cross-examine and that sort of thing. But the Democrats are keeping this from the American people, and I find it deplorable.
Brad, we appreciate the call so much. Thanks for calling in. We appreciate the perspective. 513-419-7100 is the number.
Could I respond?
I would love for you to respond, Ken. Go ahead.
Just quickly, Brad. Look, I understand what you're saying, and I think that, look, there's obviously a segment of the populace from day one who did not want Donald Trump in office. But I think you're incorrect to say that the Democrats are keeping this from the Republicans, because the Republicans are in these hearings. They are behind closed doors. They are asking questions of these witnesses. They are interrogating them as the Democrats are. So, look, ultimately, as Michael said earlier, they will be public hearings. But what's going on now behind closed doors is not Democrats only. Republicans are having their say, and they're asking questions as well. And so that's why the stunt that they pulled yesterday, this is not about bias. This is just about the way things are. Look, Benghazi was not about impeachment, but was basically indicting the foreign policy of the United States. The Republicans ran that hearing, and the Democrats were not happy with that either. But was it illegal? Probably not. And neither is what's going on now.
We're going to talk about Syria and its potential impact on public opinion of what's going on. And we'll also take a look at the Democrats running for president as well. We're seeing some movement in the poll, and we'll have some chat about that. You're listening to The Political Junkie on Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Michael.
And we also have WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson. Hey, Howard.
Hey, Michael.
Join our conversation and weigh in with your own thoughts, opinions, and questions at 513-419-7100. Email talk at WVXU.org or find us
Michael.
On Michael. Uh-oh. What have I done?
No, you had done nothing wrong, but this stuck with me also. You said to Howard before that we should do a show on baseball and politics. There's so much in common with baseball and politics.
Oh, yeah.
We love the history. We love the lore. We love the trivia. We love the amazing people who came before us. I think a lot of people who love baseball and politics, vice versa, that's the attraction we have to it. It's exciting, although I would just assume, I would dare say that politics is more important.
Yeah.
I don't know if Howard would agree with that.
Some days.
I think our producer, Selena Reeder, is standing by to produce that show. She seems very interested in that. I think
sign
she'd
us
like
up,
that.
Sign us up.
Well, I've written a lot of stories over the years about the presidency and baseball.
Well, there's one key difference, though, right? And that's that baseball season ends.
Yes.
Right? There's a period of time where there is no baseball taking place, and politics never really stops. And there's been so much going on lately, and we've got phone calls coming in, 513-419-7100. We'll get to some calls coming up, and you can join us as well. But right around the time that this Ukraine news really started to evolve, and we got a clearer picture of what was intended or what was implied by the suggestion of a quid pro quo, and public polling started to shift rather dramatically. And Ken, you brought up the Saturday massacre from the Nixon administration when that was going on, but public opinion had not quite shifted fully yet. We're seeing some pretty significant movement in the polls. 538 analysis just today reports more than 49% of Americans now support impeachment. That's sort of a conglomerate of all the polls that they're looking at. So about 49.3%, while 44% oppose. So that's a plurality that supports impeachment at that point. What do you think, Ken, has happened to shift people in that direction?
Well, I think, first of all, that's one of the reasons I thought what Nancy Pelosi was doing was smart from the beginning, because even though you had some people out there like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and others who wanted impeachment starting in January of 2017, she said, look, I'm not going to start an impeachment process when the country is not behind it. And by having these kind of either testimonies or things that Trump has done for Ukraine, in other words, going to foreign governments to get help, to get, you know, threatening to withhold aid to regarding dirt on an opponent, that is beyond the pale. And I'm saying that I would say that if Obama were president or Clinton were president, yeah, you just don't do these things. So I think that the steady drumbeat of activities and actions taken by this administration has turned the country not completely around, like the guy, the fellow who called before, Brad, who basically says it's, you know, it says that the Republicans are being treated unfairly. And there are a lot of Republicans who feel that way, but there are more and more people who are open to seeing what's going on and saying, well, maybe there is a there.
513-419-7100 is the number. Let's go to the phones now. We have Gail on the line. Hi, Gail. What's your question or comment?
Hello?
Hi, Gail. Go ahead.
Oh, I wanted to say that the Congress has had six committees that they have been investigating various behavior from Trump, and I think those should proceed. I don't know if they're still – I don't know the connection to the – impeachment inquiry, but they should proceed, get all the facts out, whether that leads to impeachment or not. The people can decide on, well, their representatives can decide on impeachment, or we can decide at the polls.
Gail, we appreciate your thoughts very much. Thanks for calling in. 513-419-7100. Let's go to Andrew now. Hi, Andrew. What's your question or comment?
Hi, I just had a general comment about the economy under Trump. I have a finance background, and I'm constantly surprised at the tax cuts that you see and really what that's doing for the middle class. I feel like a lot of Trump supporters should check their tax returns and just see how trickle-down economics has really helped them, or, you know, in other words, hurt them by eroding some of the middle class and really just the economy Trump inherited, say, compared to the Obama administration. And I just wanted to hear general thoughts or comments that your panel might have. Thank you for the show, and I'll take my comment off the air.
Thanks, Andrew. We appreciate your call. We'll give Howard a chance to weigh in on that. The economy has been really the strong suit during the Trump administration. We do see pretty favorable winds in most economic indicators. There are others where not everyone is necessarily benefiting, and maybe there's a situation in this country where a lot of people in the country never really benefit from our system. But that is his thing.
That's his only thing right now. I mean, you look at the polls and they break them down over issues. He's doing terribly on everything except the economy and jobs and that sort of thing. Now, whether or not that's going to hold, whether or not it's going to last, whether or not it's going to apply when he starts going into some of these so-called Rust Belt states like Ohio and Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania – I don't know, because things haven't really changed much.
That seems to be...
In fact, we're slipping in some of those states.
And the question from our caller there was, you know, that Trump inherited a lot of favorable wins, you know, in this. So what indicators from Trump policy, and Ken, I'll let you weigh in on this, Trump has enacted some economic policy, certainly the tax cut being the most widely known probably. He did inherit an improving economy that his predecessor did not inherit and had to lead a construction from really a bad time. So what do you think when people break down Trump's contributions to the economy, which side will they fall on, good or bad?
Well, if there was no – if all this other stuff was not there, if there was no Ukraine, if there was no Syria foreign policy debacle, if there was no lying and bullying and dishonesty – I said that with completely lack of bias – he would be overwhelmingly reelected because the economy is good. Now, should we credit Obama and not Trump? Well, let's be honest here. If the economy were tanking, we would be blaming – Trump. The fact that it's not, then he should get credit. I mean, yes, the tax cuts have blown up the deficit. And yes, factories are closing despite promises to the contrary. And yes, the coal industry is not coming back as he promised. But the fact is that jobs are up, unemployment is down, a record unemployment, record employment numbers. And should he take credit for it? Absolutely. So I think if there weren't all these other things, as James Carville famously said, it's the economy, stupid. And most of the time, it is the economy that determines whether a president gets reelected or not. George H.W. Bush was defeated because he didn't know how to handle the economy. The deficit was enormous. Bill Clinton was reelected because he improved the economy. So you know, the economy is important. But when you have everything else going on, it's sometimes... unfortunately for the president, the good economic news is buried on page 38 because so many other things, like the danger to the Constitution, is on the front page.
I think Ken's absolutely right. I mean, he can tout the job numbers and he can tout the tax cuts. But if you dig down into it and if you buy the theory, and I think it's true that he won – because of about 80,000 votes in those Great Lakes states, they're not recovering. They're not. They're still hurting. They're still waiting for him to keep his promises to open places like the Lordstown plant in Ohio and the coal mines and the steel mills, and it hasn't happened. And they if those people are alienated, then he's in big trouble.
Let's go back to the phones now. Next in line is Barry. Hi, Barry. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, the comments that I was going to make have already been made. But I just want to reinforce the one in that these impeachment inquiry hearings are, in fact, bipartisan. And we're letting the other side, or we're letting Republicans claim that they're not, and not really responding back to that. The fact of the matter is there are Republicans in those hearings. There are attorneys in those hearings. This is not a partisan attack. And the other part of that is we also hear a lot about how we're trying to overturn the people's wishes. Well, that might have been the 2016 election, but let's remember in 2018, Democrats took back over the House. That's also the people's wishes.
Barry, we appreciate your call and your comments very much.
Wait,
thanks so much.
In fairness, though, the Republicans did gain in the Senate. So 2018 did go both ways, at least if regarding the House and Senate.
And that's correct. Okay, next up in line is Paul. Hi, Paul. What's your question or comment?
Something I heard earlier from one of your callers mentioned the secrecy of this hearing, and I heard something the other day that makes a lot of sense. Wouldn't it be best to have a secret hearing so that you have witnesses that are not trying to make their stories line up with each other? It's similar to a grand jury. You don't, if you run a grand jury for that exact reason, and let's understand that the impeachment inquiry, the Congress decides its own format. It's not like a legal proceeding, so all these things about, you know, confronting your accusers and things like that, it obscures the real picture.
Paul, thanks so much for your perspective as well. We appreciate it. 513-419-7100 is the number to call. Next up is Joe. Hi, Joe. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I'm thinking to myself that with the Nixon impeachment proceedings, that many people remember how destabilizing that was, and that I think plays a part in how, you know, people are reluctant to, you know, endorse it. And I think that it's going to take ironclad evidence, you know, for a big shift in people's support for impeachment. And that's only going to happen when the multiple investigations in the House yield out some pretty significant ironclad evidence. And, you know, Nixon knew it was coming, and Trump seems to know it's going to come, but I'm betting it's going to go right down to taking him out of office with the Senate. And the Republicans in the Senate are going to have to see that that evidence is ironclad and there is no other approach.
Joe, we thank you very much for your call. 513-419-7100 is the number. Vince is up. Vincent is up next. Vincent, how are you? What's your question or comment?
Oh, hi. Thank you. My comment first is I don't think a president should ever call the people that vote in the presidential election scum. And my second comment or question would be related to baseball and politics. And my question is hypothetical. Who would be the second president to have thrown out a ball at the World Series and then lost the next election?
Vincent, very clever. We appreciate the call. We'll see if the guys can come up with an answer.
And actually, somebody answered that question.
Somebody did answer that question.
It was Jimmy Carter.
There you go. Jimmy Carter was the answer there.
But the first president to throw out a pitch at the World Series was Woodrow Wilson in 1915, but he was reelected, as you well remember, over Charles Evans Hughes in 1916, when Howard and I were just mere tots.
Right. Yeah. I didn't cover that.
Very quickly on these impeachment poll numbers, I want to ask that in the context of what's happened in Syria with the Turkish forces entering Kurdish territory that had previously been protected by the United States in this turnabout in foreign policy by President Trump. Ken, do you think that that action and sort of the unfavorable reaction across the board from Republicans and Democrats that the president received has had an impact on the impeachment polls?
I think it has. I think it has because the fact is we have not seen really ever as much to this degree in the past Republicans willing to stand up and criticize the president. And when you have somebody like Lindsey Graham, who of course will never vote for impeachment, but to see Lindsey Graham criticizing Trump on what has been widely and probably correctly called the betrayal of the Kurds, I mean, that's pretty far. So when you have two-thirds of the House Republicans voting to condemn the president's foreign policy when it comes to Syria and what's happened there, I think it may open up the possibility of others may be more willing to distance themselves from the president.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Ken, thanks for sticking around with us.
I love this show, Michael.
And the show loves you back. And we also have with us WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson. Howard, thanks for staying with us as well.
Absolutely.
So we're moving on to talk about the Democrats before we get to more of the phone calls. And I believe we've just got some breaking news from Ohio Congressman Tim Ryan, who is withdrawing from that race. He says, quote, "I'm announcing today that I am withdrawing from the presidential campaign after 7 long months of hard work." Oh, our producer's still typing some text to me, but I'm sure it goes on. Oh, here it is. "I'll be returning home to my family and friends and community in Ohio to run for re-election for my congressional seat." Howard, Tim never really got any footing in this race.
No, he didn't. And I like Tim, and Tim's a good guy, but he was never going anywhere in the first place.
And Ken, do we expect that some of these candidates like Tim Ryan, who have just not caught on, never even polled in the single digits on the national level, are they going to start leaving the race?
I think so. I mean, I don't like the fact that pundits will decide what candidates stay and which candidates don't stay. But the fact is, when you have people like John Delaney and Michael Bennett and Steve Bullock and others like Tim Ryan, who just are not going to qualify for upcoming debates, they're no longer part of the conversation. If people have forgotten about them, there's really no room to advance. And debates are very significant.
We talked a little bit about this last time when the debates were less stringent earlier in the season, where they really gave everyone the opportunity. And in this day and age of media access, where you can basically reach anybody you feel like you need to reach, if you hadn't caught on after all of that free media, what can you possibly expect?
Right. And we're getting to the point now where we're getting fairly close to Iowa and then New Hampshire. And, you know, you can't have 12 people on the stage anymore.
Okay, so we are seeing some movement in the polls, and in a way, I guess we're not seeing a whole lot at all. There was one poll specific to Iowa that showed a tightening race between who have been the top three candidates lately. You've got Joe Biden, the former vice president, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, of course, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. But we saw the biggest surge come from South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg. Ken, I'm wondering your thoughts on Pete Buttigieg specifically. Is he poised to pull off an upset in Iowa and disrupt this complete race?
That's absolutely possible. I mean, we still have like 100 days or so, and it's very possible. Yes, he's the last poll I saw was USA Today that he's moved into third place ahead of Bernie Sanders. Again, this is only one poll, and it may be an outlier. We don't know. But the fact is, he's raised a lot of money. He's raised $19 million in the last quarter. Only Sanders and Warren have raised more. And I think his feeling is that he's running basically as a kind of liberal centrist. And if he feels that if Joe Biden is going to fade, and personally, I have not been impressed with Joe Biden in any of the debates, and I just think I'm not convinced he's going to be the nominee. But I think the fact that he was much more aggressive in the last debate, he took on Beto O'Rourke as well as Tulsi Gabbard very effectively, I thought. I think that more and more people are willing to give him a look, especially among moderate voters who may feel that Biden is fading.
I absolutely agree. I mean, and Iowa voters kind of enjoy upsetting an apple cart, and they are entirely capable of doing it in that race.
And for somebody he like really is. It seems that Mayor Pete, as he's known colloquially, is carving out that moderate lane.
Oh yeah.
So he's taking
that's a
little
good
bit
lane
of that.
To be in Iowa.
Okay. So I'd read some reporting that, you know, there are some Democrats who wish someone else would emerge. Maybe they're just not happy with this field. This may have been a bit of a lame analysis. I don't know. But it did involve some high-profile names, not the least of which was former nominee Hillary Clinton. But, Howard, I want to ask you specifically about a man named Sherrod Brown, the Democratic senator from Ohio. And he said that he is still being asked all the time about getting in and why he didn't get in. And just quickly tell us what you think must be in his head right now, whether he thinks he missed an opportunity, because he sort of bridges that gap between moderate mainstream Democratic Party platform and an appeal to liberal voters.
He pulled the same voters in Ohio that Donald Trump did in eastern Ohio and Mahoning Valley, those iron steel workers and former coal miners. He speaks to them. Right before this latest Democratic debate, he sent out a memo to all the candidates saying, if you want to talk about something, talk about these things. And he had about six bullet points. One of them, the very first one, was the theme of his short-lived campaign, the dignity of work. And if you'll recall, if you watch that debate, there were several of them who picked up on that theme.
That term did come out.
It came up several times from the other candidates.
All right. Let's go back to the phone lines and get some last comments in from our listeners. Valerie, you are up next. Very quickly, what's your question or comment? Do we have Valerie?
Oh, okay. Thank you so much.
Yes. Go right ahead.
I'm concerned about the level of understanding about separation of powers and how important it is. There are, in the Constitution, there are set functions for each branch of government so that one aspect of the government doesn't overrun another aspect of the government. And I feel that Mr. Trump doesn't understand it. He feels like he's a king. He can do anything he wants. He can flout the rules. He can disregard the rule of law. And I got to tell you, I was with Nancy Pelosi on the impeachment, being a lawyer. And when Mr. Giuliani went out and decided to run foreign policy by himself instead of leaving that to the State Department, that was a game changer for me. I'm really offended by that. We have to respect the Constitution, the enumerated powers for each branch of government, because that was the way the founders set it up so that regardless of which party was in power, those rules would hold firm unless we publicly decided through our congressional process and maybe the judiciary to change them. And
Valerie, thanks so much for the comment and the call. We appreciate it very much. Let's get another caller in now. Nancy is up next. Go right ahead, Nancy, with your question or comment.
Oh, thanks a lot. I have a question. I want to know if our Congressman Brad Winstrup participated in yesterday's barging into the investigation on the impeachment inquiry.
I don't believe he was in that crowd, no.
I thought I saw some Twitter activity that he supported the action. I can
supports the action, but he wasn't.
Yeah, I didn't see him in the photo. I did look for our local representatives. I didn't see them in the photo, right.
He's on one of those.
And that's exactly right, is that he's on one of the committees. So, Nancy, thanks so much for the call and the question, and we'll look a little further into that. But that's what I saw because I did look that up earlier. So thank you so much for the call. Hey, Ken, before we start to wind down the show, I want to ask you if the name Pierre Delecto means anything to you.
Yes, he's good friends with Carlos Danger.
All right, so Carlos Danger was the alter ego of former New York Congressman Anthony Weiner.
That's correct.
And Pierre Delecto is a name that we now know to be associated with a man named Mitt Romney.
Right, Romney has his alternate Twitter account so he could monitor and defend himself. And you know something? You know, everybody's making fun of Romney, and I know that Stephen Colbert and everybody's, you know, pot shots. But right now, Mitt Romney is one of my heroes. The fact that he's standing up to a president of his own party. Eugene McCarthy did that with Johnson. There are some people who feel that the cause is more important than party loyalty. So I know we're all having fun with Mr. Delecto, but I think Romney is showing extreme courage, which other members of his party have not shown.
And that's what I want to talk about, because we are seeing a sort of Romney revival now. Those on the right who have been described as never Trumpers from the beginning, I think of some prominent ones like Bill Kristol, right? You know, he's been in the Washington political landscape as a commentator for a long time. And Mitt Romney fits that mold a little more traditionally than Donald Trump ever could. Now it looks like those people have found a champion again, Howard.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't matter that he's perceived by some people as, you know, sort of a stiff and a empty suit, but I mean he's shown a backbone, and that's what a lot of people are looking for, and they don't find it in many members, Republican members of Congress right now.
There was that Netflix documentary series that followed his last campaign in 2012, where he took on President Obama and was the Republican nominee and ended up in defeat. And that is one of my favorite political documentaries I've seen. Ken, I don't know if you've seen that one, but I
have not.
It's on Netflix. I think it's just called
Mitt.
It's a pretty good story. What are we going to be looking at in the week ahead, guys? I mean, the ever-changing landscape. Wow. Like, there's just no way to know what to expect. I mean, I guess we'll be looking for clues that these impeachment hearings will be moving closer to the
public. I guess maybe that we find peace between Donald Trump and John Legend's girlfriend or whatever.
He does tweet against Chrissy Teigen every now and then. That's right.
The only thing I can predict is game 3 of the World Series, because and can I just say one quick thing? Because Valerie was talking about separation of powers, and I really, really liked her call. Yeah. But don't credit or blame Trump for all this. The Republicans in Congress could make separation of powers a big issue if they stood up for their own legislative body, and they don't.
That is Ken Rudin, the political junkie. Ken, always a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, guys. Great show.
Howard Wilkinson, our WVXU senior political analyst, thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.